Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I've invited on the program author Robert Crook to talk about his new book titled Sunrise. Robert Crook is a journalist, media executive, and teacher. His poetry has been published in the West Hills Review, which is the literary journal of the Walt Whitman birthplace in Long Island, New York. He has lectured at Suffolk County Community College, the University of Nebraska, New York University, and the University of Connecticut. He began his career as a sports reporter and columnist for the Long Island Press, and for 13 years served as North American press spokesman for Reuters, the international news group. Currently, he heads financial media relations for the U.S. division of Mackenson Cowell, a capital markets advisory firm founded in 1989, which provides independent research and advice to a wide range of companies based primarily in Europe and North America. Sunrise is his second novel and was published in December of 2007. His first novel, American Family, out in 2004, was critically praised and became a regional bestseller, popular with East Coast book discussion clubs. He and his wife reside in Bridgewater, Connecticut, and I am just so happy to have Robert on the phone today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Robert.
Thank you, Juanita. It's so great to be here with you.
Yes, great. Well, really, congratulations. It's always exciting putting out a book.
It is. It's very exciting.
Mm-hmm. And this is actually your second full-length book. I'd like to hear why you actually began writing novels at this point in your life.
Well, writing fiction has been a kind of a dream and an intention just about all my life. I think I started getting this urge from earliest high school days, I'd say. I've always been a lover of literature, probably like many of your listeners, I've always had this kind of inkling and urge to want to make some literature, take part in this creative process that I kind of fell in love with at the age of 14 or 15. Took me a while to get there. I mean, I've been a writer, I guess, more or less all my life, as you just mentioned, in various commercial and journalistic endeavors. But when I finally got to an age where I felt I could take a step back from the corporate business world about 7 years ago and focus on, I guess, another phase of my life, I decided, well, you know, this is going to be the time, and I'm going to see what I can do by writing novels.
How did you find the whole process of writing a novel? I mean, it's very different from the writing that you have done previously. Was it what you expected?
In some ways, yes, but in some ways it was quite a journey and quite a discovery, which, of course, is ongoing. Each time I embark on one of these little journeys of writing a novel, it's both a wonderful experience of growth and discovery, some clouds and storms and frustrations, but you know, the clouds always pass. A resolution always arises, and the journey always comes to a nice end. But I like to describe this process in an organic way, because that's how it feels to me. It feels like creating things.
So did you have an initial idea for this book, for Sunrise, this story, or did it evolve in an organic way?
A little bit of both, I guess, like probably most of the things I've written. Although I was born in Brooklyn, my family moved to Long Island, out Suffolk County on Long Island, when I was a kid. And Long Island is pretty much where I was raised, and where most of my youthful and memories and memories as a young man are all based. I went to college up in New England, but pretty much I'm a Long Island boy, and even after graduating and getting married, my wife and I lived on Long Island for some years before we found ourselves in Connecticut. But so that's a long way of saying that some ideas and familiarities with Long Island and the Long Island setting that have found their way into Sunrise have probably been bubbling up there for quite a while.
I was wondering why you decided to use Long Island as your setting, why that was just the perfect place to set this book.
In some ways, familiarity with the place, with the locale of Sunrise. And a kind of a funny thing happened too. As I was writing the book, as I went through several drafts of the book, I began to feel one of my own favorite books, probably many people's, if not their favorite book, certainly one that's among their favorites and one they're most familiar with, The Great Gatsby, which was also so famously set on Long Island, not where my book is set exactly, a different part of Long Island, but a similar part. And as I was writing my book, I began to feel certain similar themes and certain similar sort of character relationships and certain similar feelings and moods about America and who we are kind of rising to the top, if you will. And although that whole connection, as I say, began in a kind of a subconscious way, when I began to feel it really coming to the fore, I decided I'd go with that and see what happened. And in the end, Sunrise became, I guess you could say, an ode to or kind of a reworking, a very humble reworking of The Great Gatsby. I suppose in a way that you could say the book, the novel by Ian McEwan, Saturday, was said to be a kind of a reworking of Virginia Woolf's Mrs. Dalloway. It's not an out-and-out copy by any means, just a kind of an inspiration and a kind of a touchstone.
I have heard those comparisons, so I was wondering if that was an intention of yours from the beginning or if it just did kind of happen.
Yeah, it did, as I say, it did kind of sort of subconsciously, or maybe my favorite word is organically, come about. I had my intentions for what Sunrise would be were to talk about a certain kind of mood in America following 9/11, one which I would describe as a combination of or the balance between disappointment and hope. And as I wrote the novel, a couple of drafts, I found myself also reaching back into the days of my youth. You know, I'm a member of the 60s generation. In the days of my youth, in the mid to late 60s, and then into the 70s, anyone who lived through those times will probably vouch for the fact that that was a similar time of great hope and great disappointments. I found myself writing Sunrise in a way that kind of connected those two time periods, the late 60s, early 70s, with the current phase of the early years of the new millennium. And as I did that, I began to feel a book by a great American author, F. Scott Fitzgerald, who wrote a similar book with similar themes about a similar age, you know, the Roaring Twenties. An age of great hope, prosperity, with a kind of a bitter end, a disappointing end, a period of history in some emotional ways, I think similar to the late 60s and perhaps even our time now.
You really do bridge the 60s and 70s with this modern time. Is this something that we'll see reoccurring through your novels, that very human type of theme as well as different time periods?
Well, I do like to find stories that usually I like to try to find relationships, love stories between, you know, husbands and wives or lovers or relationships and deep love among family members. And I like to put those kinds of situations, those kinds of relationships into a story that takes the reader on a journey that involves some downturns, you know, some hurdles, some obstacles. You know, I guess I subscribe to the notion that, you know, as a writer at least, of love being not the sort of the doorway to instant and endless happiness, but more the doorway to understanding and in some perhaps in some ways atonement. Mm. I do find that the deeper I sometimes get into some of these kinds of fictional relationships that I develop, certain elements or truths about all of us as Americans, perhaps at any given moment, begin to echo in my mind. I mean, I wrote the first novel I wrote was entitled American Family.
Yes.
for very specific reasons, because although that book, which was set in the early to mid 1950s, was essentially about a particular family, it ultimately became a story about two or three families and their interaction with each other, and a sort of not entirely positive, not entirely friendly interaction between those families, although there is great love and a tremendous love affair that ties them all together. But, you know, my real ultimate theme in that book was, as the title would suggest, taking a look at all of us. I see us as a family. I see Americans as a family. And like family members, we love each other. We fight with each other. We debate with each other. We have moments where we can't speak to each other. And yet, you know, ultimately, we are who we have. And that's what America means. America at its best is this great, big, diverse family.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, yes, I do see larger implications often in the fictional relationships that I try to create.
Mm-hmm. And so most of the books that you write, I'm not very familiar with your poetry and if it's along the same themes, but is the whole idea of Americana something that you're going to ride through your novels?
I think you could say that, mm-hmm. that would be true, yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm very much an American writer. I'm very much a person who, when he writes, writes the kinds of books that he likes to read, and the kinds of books that I've always liked to read have been the ones by authors whose stories have both been real and realistic and meaningful and really, you know, deeply emotional and engaging, but have always said something about who we are as Americans.
Mm. You know, I love that a really emotional, deeply emotional connection that you have with your writing, and I'm wondering if your original forays into poetry helped to cultivate that in you.
Probably they did. I mean, the poetry that I've written has been about love, so yes,
mm-hmm.
I guess my poetry has been a way of expressing some of the same things that we've been discussing here. You know, I think love and finding love, losing love, being facing hurdles in love, renewing love, coming to grips with the fact that that love and commitment to one another is really the answer. To life's sometimes disappointing tests and trials to us. Out of that, I think, comes a very, very intense and I think universal experience that a writer can express and in that way, if you do it halfway well, readers will respond to that, because that's exactly where readers are.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely has a way to connect.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay, so let's get to Sunrise. Tell us about this story. I know your main character, Stephen Dahl, he's an expatriate American living and teaching in Paris, and he ends up coming back home. So tell us about Stephen and what happens in this book.
Right. Well, I guess I should say right off the bat that it is a love affair.
Mm-hmm.
It follows the love affair between my main character, whose name is Stephen Dahl, as you said, and a woman named Alexis Jordan, and it follows them over the course of 3 decades. And as I mentioned earlier, this journey of their love is filled with both disappointment and hope. And that's meant to evoke and maybe describe the course of their generation, the 60s generation, a complex tension between disappointment and hope in their relationship and in their generation's relationship with America. The book does start with Stephen. We find Stephen teaching literature at a Paris university, and he's there in some ways because the his life and the America of the late 1970s left him in a place where he was both out of answers and uncomfortable, and he decided to make a change and live his life as a writer. And he decided that perhaps going to Paris, which he thought of at the time as the city of writers, would be a place to go and perhaps change his life. When we find him there, at the beginning of the book, we come to understand that he has had some success in changing some of the more troublesome aspects of his life, but there are many things about him and his soul and his personal his self-image that are not fully formed yet. And in some ways, living as an expatriate in Paris has kind of both protected him but also shielded him from certain truths and certain realizations that he's going to have to come to to face. He's been too protected, maybe too much in a bubble. And then, of course, 9/11 happened. That rekindles certain emotions, certainly a deep sense of a patriotism that he feels towards the country that he hasn't been back to in almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
He sort of witnesses it on a television screen one day in Paris. And ultimately, although he's still a kind of a complex character even at that point, debates the idea of whether he should go back home or continue his life in Paris, while he's debating that within himself, he gets a call from his former lover, who says that her husband, who used to be Stephen's best friend, has just died, and that's what really brings him back.
Mm-hmm.
And he's asked to come out to the end of Long Island, where his former lover and his former best friend had lived for many years as husband and wife, and he's asked to come to the funeral. And so he decides to do that, and in doing that, much about the past and much about what brought him to Paris in the first place begins to unfold, and that's pretty much the story of Sunrise.
Mm-hmm.
That series of discoveries. He discovers that he still loves this woman. He still loves Alexis. He tries to deny it at first, but ultimately he begins to admit it, even express it. But as the story goes on, he begins to see what that is really going to mean, what it's going to mean to be a man who loves. That's going to mean facing imperfections in himself and in others. It's going to mean something that he thought he wanted, which was to be a better man and to perhaps atone for whatever mistakes he may have made in the past. He ultimately comes to a point where he decides that's what he wants. He wants to atone for whatever he may have done that was a mistake in his past. And the story provides that to him, I should say, in spades.
Mm-hmm.
In a way far more powerful and dramatic than perhaps he might have ever imagined.
He's on quite an emotional and spiritual journey in this book.
He certainly is.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Did you know that audiobooks are the fastest growing publication in the book publishing industry, with over $1 billion in sales annually? And did you know that over 40 million audiobooks were sold last year? This clearly shows that millions of avid readers enjoy listening to books in their cars, while at work, traveling, and even while exercising or walking. Not only that, many individuals with vision issues rely on audiobooks to access the literary world. If you are an author interested in taking the next step with your book and tapping into an entirely new audience, we can help you turn your manuscript into a professionally produced audiobook. Visit us at readerviews.com and click on the Services for Authors tab in the top menu bar. There you will find a list of services we provide, plus a link to get the information you need to turn your work into an audiobook. The potential of the audiobook has been proven and may just be the ideal next step for you in promoting your masterpiece. Go to readerviews.com today. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm speaking today with Robert Crook, author of Sunrise. You can find out more about Robert through his website, robertcrook.org. Why was it important to make him? I know physically as well as metaphorically, to make him an expatriate. I find that aspect of the story very interesting.
Well, I think that I felt that could give him, as a character, a certain believable objectivity.
Mm.
I wanted a character who could believably be seen by a reader as being an American, but someone with, let's say, an objective viewpoint on the America he comes back and finds in, it's the spring of 2003,
mm-hmm.
when he actually physically ultimately comes back to his boyhood Long Island. And I found it dramatically interesting to me as a writer, and I hoped I could make it interesting to a reader to have such a person come back and show us the America he found after almost 30 years away, and see America at that point through his eyes, through those objective eyes. Not perfect. He's not a perfect person, certainly, but that too I wanted to have. I wanted to have a believable character. But I thought that it might intrigue a reader to see America through perhaps somewhat European eyes, but certainly objective eyes. But of course, never forgetting the fact that Stephen may have lived in Paris for all this time, but he's still an American.
Yes.
And he still feels that very, very strongly. But he comes back to a place that in some ways is very, very different from what he left.
Mm-hmm. Well, the whole thread of the September 11th connection is very, very interesting to this story as well. And you actually tie in those events with something that went on in Stephen's family when he was younger. So I'd like to have you talk a little bit to that, and then also to the whole inclusion of the September 11th, in which was obviously such a huge part of American history, that you decided to weave it into this story.
Yes, I mean, that's always a problematic issue. Of course, the events of September 11th were very it's difficult sometimes to even find the words to describe it. But, I actually believe that it is part of the responsibility of a serious writer to try to do so. Now, that's a day that happened to all of us. We all know what that meant to us, what we felt like that day, the very conflicting and complex feelings that tragedy, and I would say also that outrage, evoked in us. in some ways, that event, that horrible tragedy, is meant as a kind of an echo of a significant tragedy that befalls Stephen Dahl and his family. What happens, we discover as the book goes on, is that years before, his younger sister, Ellen, was killed in a tragic car accident. And it happened under circumstances in which both he and his parent, both of his parents, not only feel a tremendous sense of loss and tragedy, but personal responsibility. There's a certain aspect of the events that led up to that that tragedy that are leave Stephen and both of his parents feeling a sense of personal responsibility for that having happened, which they can't shake. I won't say any more because that's part of the weaving of the story.
Sure.
But it's important for the readers to know that just in the way that Stephen and his parents, I think, deal not entirely successfully with this tragic event, with the overbearing weight of their grief, and even their loss of faith as a result of their inability to forgive themselves and to deal with the loss of their sweet daughter, or in Stephen's case, his sweet sister. You know, in some ways, I wanted to make a kind of an emotional, spiritual, maybe even moral connection between that family kind of tragedy and the tragedy we all faced as an American family of 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that in some ways, America in the years, certainly in the first several years following September 11th, had a similar difficult time letting go of our sadness, even our anger, our fear, quite understandable emotions. But I think most people would agree that some of those emotions clouded out some of our more rational thoughts, and maybe led. At least I think they might have led to some questionable decisions.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a political statement by any means. You know, we're all in the same boat. We're all Americans. What happened is what happened. I'm just trying to make a kind of a human statement. I would say that I do believe that if they had the chance, most of us would take back some of the decisions we did make in 2002
in hindsight,
and 2003. And that, too, you know, that is really what Sunrise ultimately is all about. It's about decisions in Stephen's life and perhaps decisions in all of our lives that we come to realize we can't take back. It happened, and there are great costs involved. And in order to find the right future for ourselves, and perhaps even make the right set of atonement, we have to face facts.
That's so eloquently put, Robert.
Oh, thank you.
It's wonderful. You know, I was wondering if you were wanting to make any political statements with the inclusion of the September 11th event, but it really seems like you are more, as a writer, taking on the role as just witness to the human aspect, the human emotional journey of that tragedy.
That's a wonderful word, Juanita. Witness. I think that's what a fiction writer really is, you know, or a poet, or a playwright, a witness, or even a reporter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not making the slightest political statement here. I'm a witness.
Mm-hmm. So now I know that you have written this in first person.
Yes.
With your lead character, and I know that your first novel was in first person as well. How important is Alexis to the overall story?
She's extremely important to Stephen. First of all, as the figure that he is in love with, I would say that the most important sort of dramatic function of her character is to help us see Stephen more clearly. for Stephen to see himself more clearly. In the early parts of their relationship together, which take place in the early to mid 1970s, Stephen is in a kind of a state of mind and a state of being in which he doesn't see very much very clearly. And he knows he loves this girl, and she loves him, and they are, you know, strongly attracted to each other, and that's all good. That's all good. But he doesn't really see her, and that is something that will lead to significant problems in their relationship. Now, part of the reason he doesn't see her clearly is because of the state he's in, and in some ways he's not looking. But on the other hand, there are certain things about her life that we learn throughout the course of the book that she's not particularly happy about herself. She has some atonements and some realizations to come to about her own life as well. And in some ways, she's a very similar kind of character to Stephen. In some ways, she's kind of like his female opposite kind of mirror.
Mm-hmm.
She has, and so in some ways, she goes through a very, very similar spiritual and emotional and moral journey as Stephen does. Their love affair is kind of like a mirror on that.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, at first, in the first part of it, it comes to a series of hurdles that they can't negotiate. Actually, she ends up marrying his best friend.
Mm-hmm.
But the rekindling of the relationship in the more current parts of the book show us two far more mature people looking at themselves and their past in a far more mature and honest way, and that helps the reader come to grips with them and those two characters come to grips with each other. And as I said a little bit earlier, their affair is meant to be as much about understanding and enlightenment as it is to be about any kind of happiness.
Mm-hmm.
So Alexis is very important because she takes the same journey that Stephen takes. For most of their lives, they take it apart. They're living a world apart from each other, but they end up in the same place.
It's a really interesting play on the themes of illusion in reality.
Yes.
In this book. I'd like to know why those themes interest you so much.
Well, probably for a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think sometimes reality for all of us can sometimes tend to be so harsh and so unforgiving that sometimes I think we retreat from it. In some ways, the characters in my story in Sunrise are characters who do that perhaps more dramatically and in a more exaggerated way than most of us actually do in our lives. I mean, most of us, if we lived in certain ways the way these characters do, you know, our husbands or our wives would probably, you know, slap us silly.
And say, right.
Look, you know, wake up, snap out of it.
Right.
You know, but for the purposes of my book, I have my characters sort of take this journey that starts in hope, ends in fantasy, and then has to come through the other side.
Mm-hmm.
to what I would call a reality. Or a reality check. I mean, this plays somewhat into the very title that I chose for the book. You know, I've called this book Sunrise, which one would think is a very hopeful, renewing, you know, reawakening kind of a concept, and it very much is. But of course, throughout the story, as you say, there is some illusion and some loss as well. The point is that we arrive at the end of this journey of loss, illusion, and renewal facing tomorrow in a way that's realistic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sun does rise tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And the hopefulness of existence and life is that that there always is a tomorrow, or there usually is a tomorrow. Conceptually, there's always tomorrow. The sun rises again, gives us a new opportunity. But that sun rises not on a dream, not on a fantasy, but on reality. And here again, I would say that this is true of the fictional characters that I've put in this book, and all of us as Americans as we got up this morning.
Right, sure. You know, you write in a way that is very appealing to both men and women. Do you have to consider that at all when you're writing?
Well, I mean, I'm so happy to hear you say that, because I sometimes do. I do worry about that. I do try very, very hard to make realistic characters. And I guess what I do is, obviously I'm a man, and when I have a female character that's going to be very important to the book, or even a secondary female character who's going to be important in some specific way, I mean, the thing I'm very, very cognizant of is, you know, I don't want this to be some man's idea of some female. I need this to be really a believable female character, as believable as hopefully some of my male characters are. So yes, it is very, very important to me. I guess what I try to do is just to go beyond the male and the female and just try to go to the human. And try to reach down into whatever this character is that I've sort of created, and try not to allow that character to be superficial, try not to allow them to be a kind of a stick figure or a kind of a cliche, but try to give them deep, deep emotions, conflicting emotions, you know, a human dimension. And I think the closer a writer gets to the human element in any character, then that character becomes believable as whomever they are,
mm-hmm.
man, woman, you know, child, whatever they are. Readers will feel the humanity in that character and say, oh, yes.
Connect,
you know,
with it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Definitely.
That's what I try to do anyway.
Yes. Well, you do it very, very well. So we're definitely looking forward to more books from you in the future. So what's next? What's on your plate right now?
Well, I am working on a third novel now. I've got an advanced draft of a book called The Earth and Its Sorrows.
Mm-hmm.
It's got some work to go on it, but I'm working very, very hard. Here's another contemporary story. It's another first-person narrative. This one is about a man who's a successful businessman who recently lost his son in a terrible accident. He and his wife and his their surviving daughter, who's an adult, are in a kind of a state of almost frozen mourning as the book begins. And this narrator, this main character, arrives at a little town where he grew up, prepared to sell off an old family cottage because he and his wife have decided to kind of retire and downsize their lives at this stage, and maybe deal with this tragedy that's happened to them, this grief, deal with their grief. But it only takes this man a few minutes at this old cottage, where he hasn't really been in years, for him to suddenly feel more emotional about things and more alive than he's felt in several years. He's been in a kind of a state of suppression since his son died, and suddenly coming to this place where he spent his own boyhood, certain feelings and emotions suddenly explode mm-hmm. within him. So not only that, but suddenly after 2 years of kind of living in a kind of a place of darkness, in this place of his own boyhood, he suddenly feels the actual presence of his dead son.
Wow.
Something he can't quite tell the realtor who he's met, and was about to sign over the listing papers to.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't quite tell his wife or his daughter when he calls them later in the day and tells them that he's delayed signing the papers and he's going to, in fact, spend a few days here.
Wow.
So, of course, he's afraid they'll think he's crazy. And, of course, they do.
Yes.
But he tells him he wants to stay there a few days just to kind of think, maybe do a little little walking around and contemplating. What happens is that a few days turns into a few weeks. He ends up meeting some old friends, the descendants of some old families that he grew up with in that area. His estranged brother shows up. He runs into his old high school sweetheart who still lives in the town. And some old, you know, some old storylines, some old hurts, sins, and loves are revealed. Some things are resolved. There's even a little sort of historical mystery that is held within this old cottage that he owns that he had never known, and which is kind of interestingly revealed. At least I hope it's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, what it boils down to is that this place of his boyhood saves him.
Oh.
And the people that he grew up with save him.
Another
so I'm hoping that I can do this well, and I'm hoping readers will like it.
I think you'll be able to pull it off.
Oh, thanks, Juan.
So what's your website, Robert?
My website is www.robertcrook, all one word, .org.
Great.
O-R-G.
And your books can be purchased through your website?
Yes, there are links there to Amazon and .com and BarnesandNoble.com, yes. Plus there's lots of other stuff about describing the books. There are some nice book reviews on there, including some nice notices that ReaderViews have given me. And there's some bio material, and there's a list of my, you know, upcoming appearances and stuff.
Oh, great, great. You know, and it really has to be said that your books would be wonderful for book clubs. Do you get much feedback on that end of things?
Well, I certainly did with my first book,
yeah.
With American Family. I try to reach out to book clubs very, very strongly. Most of the book clubs who had me as a guest for American Family are now reading Sunrise, and so I'm hoping that I'll be a guest at plenty of book clubs for this second book, and I'm always available to talk with or to interact with book clubs. I think that's one of the best ways. Certainly, it's the most fun way for a writer
mm-hmm.
to get into his book and to talk about it with people who have read it and really answer questions and interact. So I'm a big fan and a big supporter of book clubs,
mm.
and we'll do pretty much anything to respond to the interest of book clubs if they have any.
Now, was it Sunrise or was it American Family that won the Publisher's Choice Award?
It's the second one, Sunrise.
Yes, yes. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. My publisher, iUniverse, has been very kind to me about this book. They seem to feel it has great commercial potential, and they've been very, very kind and complimentary about its literary appeal.
Mm-hmm.
So they've put it into this publisher's choice program that they have, which I guess 1% or less of the titles that they publish actually receive. And what it, among the main things that this that this means is that the book will be promoted through Barnes & Noble stores. So it's quite nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite an accomplishment, really. Congratulations.
Thank you, Juanita.
Robert, it's been wonderful talking with you. Thanks so much for joining us today. I hope
Thank
to
you.
Have you back next year for your next
well,
book.
I'd love to be your guest anytime. This has been such a pleasure for me. Thank you so much.
Okay, great. Thank you. You take care, Robert.
Thank you, Juanita. You too.
All right. Okay, listeners, well, I've been talking with Robert Crook. His book, Sunrise, is available through local and online booksellers now. You can also go to his website to find out more about him, his appearances, his two books, and all sorts of other information. And the website is www.robertcrook.org, and that's CROOKE.org. All right, so thank you once again for listening to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson, and until next time.